Alaska Republicans go to the polls as part of Super Tuesday.
And can I ask, who are you coming out to support today?
It's time to make America great again. Donald Trump.
From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, March 1st. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Anchorage residents try to adapt to the snowless winter.
Basically, there's like no snow. Mostly ice and some leaves.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly. Alaska Community Action on Toxics believes future generations have the right to clean water, clean air, and toxic-free food. Learn more by visiting akaction.org. This message sponsored by Alaska Community Action on Toxics.
Alaska Republicans are holding their presidential preference poll today, part of the Super Tuesday primaries and caucuses across the nation. Democrats will hold their caucus later this month. Polls in Alaska close at 8 p.m. tonight. APRN's Rachel Waldholt stopped by a polling station earlier this evening and spoke with us from there. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Lori.
So what's the scene like there? How is turnout?
Well, I'm here at the First Christian Church on Latouche Street in Anchorage, and there's a line out the door at the polling station and has been for the last hour. The parking lot is full. People are having trouble getting in and out of the parking lot. So there's definitely been a constant stream of people. Turnout seems to be pretty high. And I spoke with Suzanne Downing, who's the communications director for the Alaska Republican Party, and she said it's like this everywhere.
Have you been able to talk to Alaskans that are there? What are voters telling you?
Well, in my very unscientific sampling of folks online to vote here, I'm hearing a lot of Trump supporters. I'd say about 75% of the folks that I've spoken to came out to vote for Donald Trump, and they said their top issues were the economy and immigration. But I also spoke to a couple folks who came out and said they're voting for anybody but Trump. So it's a little bit of a mix.
Rachel, when can we expect final results tonight?
Well, polls close at 8 p.m., but all of this voting is happening on paper ballots. So then all of the ballots have to be counted by hand, by volunteers, and then called or texted into Republican officials who will be tabulating the final results. So officials say they're hoping to get results from all of the stations by about 9:30, and then they think they'll have final results by about 11:30 p.m. tonight.
All right, Rachel, thanks for that update from downtown Anchorage.
Thanks, Lori.
Alaska Public Media will post updates online throughout the evening. You can find those at alaskapublic.org. Alaskans giving public testimony this week on the House budget proposal are opposing cuts to many areas. The Republican-led majority released a budget this week that included $145 million more in cuts than Governor Bill Walker's budget. It would reduce spending on everything from public libraries to senior benefits. Roughly 100 people testified yesterday and today on the budget. The cuts include reduced grants to mental health and addiction treatment programs. Residents also oppose cuts to pre-kindergarten, public libraries, and the University of Alaska, and they say they want the House to avoid cuts to senior benefits and public broadcasting. Juneau resident Kara Nelson directs Haven House, a faith-based home for women leaving prison.
There are over 120 people today alone that died from an accidental overdose in our nation. That is an Alaska Airlines flight that crashed every single day, and that was in 2015. And so I urge you that we are trying to lessen the beds in our prisons, but we have no supports already to facilitate the well-being of our people and our Alaskans.
Elizabeth Ripley, executive director of the Matsu Health Foundation, shared her concerns over behavioral health cuts.
Cutting behavioral health grants will only reinforce the current system that drives people to seek care in the emergency room. A 2013 data analysis showed Matsu Regional Emergency Department has 5 times the number of visits than our community mental health center. These visits to one hospital cost Alaskans $23 million in 2013, not including doctor, EMS, or police costs.
Kodiak Public Library Director Katie Baxter urged House Finance Committee members to restore funding for the Online with Libraries, or OWL, program. It funds high-speed internet connections.
I am here to urge you to restore the governor's funding of $761,800 to restore the OWL Internet Connectivity Program. This program is an intricate system that is cost efficient, that involves local and federal funding.
The House Finance Committee will hear more public testimony tomorrow and Thursday. A Superior Court judge ruled in favor of Governor Walker today in the Legislative Council's case against Medicaid expansion. The Republican-led Legislative Council sued last summer to stop Walker from unilaterally expanding Medicaid. Judge Frank Fifner ruled the governor did not violate the state constitution when he expanded Medicaid. More than 10,000 low-income Alaskans have enrolled in the program since it began on September 1st. The case hinged on whether the Medicaid expansion population was an optional or required group under federal law. The governor would have needed legislative approval to add an additional group to the program. During oral arguments, Judge Fifner noted he was likely a speed bump on the way to the state Supreme Court. Officials in Anchorage say they are critically understaffed for local elections next month. Deputy Clerk Amanda Moser says the city needs a minimum of 650 volunteers to keep polling stations staffed across the municipality. Currently, they're 70 people short.
The concern with the 70 workers is that they're not spread evenly across the city. We currently have a handful of precincts that have no workers whatsoever.
The number of election volunteers has been down the last 3 years, and local elections in April, as opposed to general elections in November, tend to get less attention with fewer voters turning out. But Moser says the current shortfall is dire, with minimum staffing levels essential to getting ballots counted in a fair and timely manner.
The biggest concern is our election worker training starts March 8th, so we are working diligently to staff these precincts.
In April, Anchorage voters will be picking seats for the school board as well as a bond package worth tens of millions of dollars for the Anchorage School District. They'll also be choosing 5 of 11 members of the Anchorage Assembly, which approves the municipality's final budget and determines local laws ranging from commercial cannabis rules to the recent passage of the state's first equal protection ordinance for LGBT residents. Moser says interested residents can find more information on volunteering at the clerk's website. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, reduced ferry service means a lot fewer things to buy in the grocery store in Angoon.
It's nothing like what we're normally used to when we come to the store. There isn't much of a selection of anything.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
The Red Dog Mine, committed to environmental excellence. Love Alaska's Fish, consider supporting Alaska Marine Conservation Council when filing for the 2016 PFD. Learn more about ensuring a brighter fisheries future for Alaska at akmarine.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Marine Conservation Council.
It's been a terrible winter for Anchorage by just about every measure. Warm weather systems have turned what little precipitation has reached the municipality into rain and ice, ruining many of the recreational activities residents enjoy. Few people's livelihoods in Anchorage depend on reliable winter conditions, but could the icy winters convince some residents to pack up and leave? Alaska Public Media's Zechariah Hughes reports as part of our Where is Winter series.
It's dusk on an icy slope in Russian Jack Park on the east side of town as 9-year-old Andrew Harmon solemnly puts on his skate skis.
The conditions right now, we really can't work with it too well.
Junior Nordic ski practices this season have been moved around to different trails in search of a bare minimum of usable terrain.
Basically, there's like no snow, mostly ice and some leaves.
For Andrew, one of the big problems is it hurts a lot if you fall. But for his dad, Art Harmon, who's coached Junior Nordic for years, it's a separate set of issues.
The main difference is that you have to be really flexible with your plan.
In lessons, Harmon has to adjust what he's teaching, even putting lessons about ski fundamentals on hold if conditions don't comply. But flexibility also means a lot more logistical coordination.
You've reached the Anchorage Junior Nordic League practice hotline.
On practice days, coaches like Harmon give updates on which parks to go to.
So again, we'll be at Russian Jack, and we'll see you at 6:15.
Harmon says even though an extra 20 minutes commuting to, say, Hilltop on the south side of town is hardly a catastrophe, it makes a difference for families. But for retailers in Anchorage, those same dismal Nordic conditions are less about inconvenience than survival. Some of the most popular winter activities, ones that demand some consumer investment, have dropped off a cliff.
Well, last year, as everybody knows, it was a very grim winter.
Marcy Baker has worked at Alaska Mountaineering and Hiking for 30 years and says after getting burned last year, they took a gamble on this season.
We decided we were going to plan on another poor winter and inventory accordingly. So we only have two big down parkas left in the store, which is smart on our case this year.
And it wasn't just coats. AMH scaled back its inventory on winter gear. Baker says a lot of their core customers haven't given up on outdoor recreation, though. It's been a good year when it comes to equipment for ice, whether that's ice skates for snowless creeks and lakes or cleats for staying upright on hikes.
Yes, everybody that's come in, they're kind of grumbling a little bit, but they've all adapted to do something. The Nordic skating has been joyful, and the backcountry skiing has been good.
There's no debating that it's been a bad year for fans of winter weather in South Central. Not only was there a record-breaking snow drought, but Anchorage has seen about a third of its average winter moisture. And the precipitation that has rolled in has been mostly rain, which, according to National Weather Service meteorologist Dave Snyder, is from a lot of warm air moving up from the southeast.
And that's locked out a lot of the more typical and what we would consider seasonable cold for a large part of the state, especially South Central.
The causes of that warmth, though, are less straightforward. El Nino, the blob, microclimates over the Gulf, fluctuations in the jet stream, all of these are contributing factors this year. And though the last three winters have been warm and low on snow, Snyder points out that when he moved here in the 2011-12 winter, Anchorage hit a record and had about 5 feet of snow above its usual average. The consistent trend, he says, is less consistency.
Just in the last several years, the variability of winter has been pretty broad.
What this means for the character and psyche of Anchorage is a little less certain. An open-ended survey by the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation asked almost 1,300 residents questions about why they live in Anchorage and why they might leave. One of the most consistent themes in the answers is recreation. People love the hiking, the skiing, the proximity to basically whatever fun thing you can dream up. For Coach Harmon, that means adapting ski practice. On a recent evening, he had his junior Nordic kids step out of their bindings for a scavenger hunt.
A couple of them said, "This is the most fun we've had at Junior Nordic." I mean, we weren't even on skis. So, I mean, I try to hold on to those things because you can be, you're bummed out about the lack of snow. But, I mean, as Alaskan, I wanna have the feeling that no matter what the weather, I can go out and enjoy myself.
For Harmon and many in Anchorage, the best medicine for a dreary winter is adaptation. And if all else fails, there's always hope that next year might be better. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Earlier this year, three southeast villages endured the longest ferry drought in recent memory. The Lakanti didn't arrive for more than a month, leaving communities such as Angoon to depend on subsistence or the only grocery store in town. As lawmakers consider even deeper cuts to ferry services, some locals are already getting a taste of what that reality could be like. KTOO's Elizabeth Jenkins has more.
Inside Angoon Trading Company, some of the shelves are starting to look bare. The potato chips are still well stocked, but there's only a couple of boxes of ho-hos and Twinkies. As for the produce,
well, there's carrots, tomatoes, cabbage, and green pepper.
Albert Howard, Angoon's mayor, says he's concerned because some of the local subsistence foods have high levels of toxic metals, and items at the grocery store are starting to run out.
It's nothing like what we're normally used to when we come to the store. There isn't much of a selection of anything.
For the things you can't get from the water or on land, you come here. Laundry detergent, sugar, rice, canned goods, and yes, the sweet spongy delicacy of a Hostess cupcake. Another Albert, Albert Kukesh III, is missing cold treats.
You know, just a simple popsicle, something that, you know, you can walk to any store in any city and get a popsicle. It's not available in Angoon at this time. And, you know, it might not seem like a big deal, you know, along the lines, but even the milk is starting to age out.
Store owners Shane and Sue Thompson say perishable items have been the hardest to keep in stock. Although the LeConte is back online now, it had been about 5 weeks since the ferry's last visit. 5 weeks since they received a regular shipment of groceries. So during the hiatus, to get fresh food, they flew to Juneau.
Shane and I ourselves had been in town for a week, so we picked up a bunch of fresh produce for the store and brought it over with our luggage, and then he just bought extra tomatoes. Now we're getting down to the wire. Now we're out of, like, lettuce and things like that.
And for them to bring things over on Alaska seaplanes, it cost $1.10 a pound.
A gallon of milk weighing 8 pounds coming from, say, Seattle, normally we've got it cut down to as much as we possibly can. And if we have to fly that over at $1 a pound, it'd be close to $15 to $18, depending. And that's ridiculous for milk.
The Thompsons are proud to say they haven't raised their prices yet. They knew the LeConte service gap would be temporary, but with proposed state cuts to the ferry system, reduced service to Angoon could become a reality.
So if that's the case, then everything's got to go up.
In 2010, Angoon's ferry terminal got a $1.6 million upgrade. It was rebuilt to accommodate the fast ferries, which only run in the summer. Angoon relies on the LeConte year-round, and the ferry also visits the communities of Tinakee Springs, Pelican, and others farther away. But this past winter, the LeConte needed maintenance. Typically, another ferry would take its place.
Now that's due to budget reductions, we've had to take a couple ferries offline.
That's Jeremy Woodrow, the spokesperson for the ferry.
So when those ferries go into their overhaul period, there isn't another ferry to provide that supplemental service.
The Alaska Marine Highway System has 11 vessels, and Woodrow compares a ferry overhaul to getting a tune-up on your car. Unfortunately, in this scenario, there's no sporty rental option with a new car smell.
We do the best we can with the budget we're given, and it really depends on what those limitations are when the way that we can schedule our ferries.
The budget for the Alaska Marine Highway System recently went through one round in the legislative process without changes to Governor Walker's proposed cuts. But it still has a ways to go. Albert Kukesh III hopes the cuts won't be deeper. He says the ability to travel outside of Angoon is important, and to fly to Juneau with a family of five could be as much as $700 one way. The ferry is his and many others' lifeline to the outside world.
I love living in Angoon, and I want to live in Angoon for the rest of my life, and I want my kids to grow up in Angoon. But if the ferry system goes, and if the food's no longer good, then I don't really have a choice.
When the LeConte finally did arrive in mid-February, it carried boxes of groceries. So Kukesh and his kids went to the store and bought popsicles. In Juneau, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, fueling philanthropic programs dedicated to creating educational and professional opportunities for Alaska Native people.
It's as easy as 1, 2, 3. 1, file your 2016 PFD application today. 2, receive a confirmation of filing. And 3, sign electronically with your secure My Alaska account. Visit pfd.alaska.gov for more information. And remember, the deadline to apply is Thursday, March 31st. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
Anchorage cyclist Tim Bernston has won the Iditarod Trail Invitational 350-mile human-powered race between Kinnick and McGrath. Bernston pedaled his fat bike into the Kuskokwim River Village this afternoon, clocking a time of just under 2 days.
It was great from the start to Skwentna, other than just being wet and icy, but it was fast. And it was great and fast from basically the top of Rainy Pass all the way to the finish.
Bernston says the only tough parts were between Shell Lake and the top of Rainy Pass, where riders were forced off their bikes to push through soft snow. Bernston, an ITI veteran who twice previously finished second in the race, says it was a smooth ride this year with no injuries or mechanical problems and minimal sleep.
I maybe got actual sleep, probably 20 minutes or something.
Bernston says the sleep deprivation resulted in one wrong turn between Nikolai and McGrath that cost him a couple of miles before he realized he was off track. He says he kept himself fueled with plenty of sugar.
Some chocolate chip cookies with some pecans and walnuts and a couple different kinds of chocolate in them. Some peanut butter cookies from Fire Island Bread Company in Anchorage. And then some trail mix that I made.
Bernstein's time is just a few hours off the ITI McGrath course record set last year. He was pressed through the race by race rookie Tyson Flaherty of Fairbanks, who came in second this afternoon. The top woman in the race, cyclist Heather Best of Fairbanks, is expected into McGrath today. Several racers, both cyclists and runners, plan to keep riding all the way to Nome. For decades, the question of whether Sitka can afford two hospitals has percolated, with little success at consolidating services. That era may be coming to a close. Last week, the Assembly entertained a motion from Search CEO Charles Clement to renew talks with Sitka Community Hospital about collaborating on medical services. KCAW's Emily Kwong has the story.
Here's a question for you. How do you kickstart a difficult conversation that no one really wants to have? If you're Charles Clement, you write a letter.
I don't want to belabor and read it back to you again, but it really was an attempt to take a stab at trying to figure out how do we have this conversation.
Sitka's tale of two hospitals stretches back to World War II. Mount Edgecombe Hospital was built in the 1940s, while the city opened Sitka Community Hospital in 1956. And between the two of them, Sitka has two emergency rooms, two obstetrics facilities, and two physical therapy centers, among other duplicate services. In his letter, Clement said that given the state's financial crisis and anticipated cuts to healthcare reimbursement, sustaining both hospitals may not be practical.
Change is coming, and I really am a firm believer that we have every opportunity to guide that change where we'd like it to go.
Clement went on to say that he's been meeting monthly with Sitka Community Hospital CEO Rob Allen. The hospitals have already experimented with sharing laboratory space and a dietitian, which Allen previously told KCAW saved Sitka Community Hospital $50,000. To that end, what Clement's letter was really asking is whether Search could draw up a management proposal for the consolidation of services between the two hospitals and present it to the Assembly. The idea was met with cautious optimism by members of the Assembly. Here's Matthew Hunter.
There's a lot of nervousness amongst our healthcare community on both sides of our bridge, and it's been going on for years. And I see this as a fresh opportunity to have a collaborative effort.
Yet staff with Sitka Community Hospital worried that the motion, which clearly said that Search would draw up the management proposal, wasn't in the spirit of collaboration. Steve Hartford is the director of operations.
That seems maybe a little narrowly focused to us, as opposed to working together to set up a structure for a community discussion.
Clement responded by saying that it was always Search's intent to include Sitka Community Hospital in the discussion. But other SCH staff, past and present, weren't so sure. They spoke about a legacy of mistrust between the two hospitals and worried that the letter hinted a takeover was on the horizon. In the end, the Assembly members penciled some new words into the motion, specifying that Search and Sitka Community Hospital would draft a management proposal and that the proposal had to be collaborative. The motion then passed unanimously. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Emily Kwong.
Commercial fishermen scrambling to buy life rafts for their boats this winter can rest a little easier. Congress has changed a new law that would have required life rafts for fishing boats traveling at least 3 miles offshore. KFSK's Angela Denning reports from Petersburg.
Less than 2 weeks ago, Coast Guard officials were in Petersburg explaining new safety requirements announced in January, that fishing boats under 36 feet would have to carry life rafts if traveling more than 3 miles offshore. The law was supposed to take effect February 26th. Also, larger boats over 36 feet needed to upgrade their life rings or floats to life rafts by November 1st. But all that's changed.
It's all been put on hold.
Steve Ramp is a commercial fishing vessel examiner for the Coast Guard based in Sitka. He says Congress decided to repeal the change in safety requirements earlier this month.
For some reason, Congress, the Senate and the House, put some riders on the Coast Guard appropriation bill to change the implementation of these increased survival craft rules.
The president signed the Coast Guard Authorization Act of 2015 on February 8th. It now calls for a formal rulemaking process before any regulations can take effect. And Ramp says the process is quite lengthy. and includes publishing in the Federal Register, a public comment period, a review period, and then formalizing the law into a regulation.
That process, we anticipate, will take a year or more.
That means it will be at least a year before survival craft requirements will change for commercial fishermen.
Everyone can continue to operate as they have prior to now.
So smaller boats can still operate out to 12 miles without a survival craft, and larger boats can operate out to 12 miles with a life float or buoyant apparatus. Without the required safety gear, fishermen can be fined or sent back to port. The survival raft law change could have affected hundreds of fishermen in Southeast. Such life rafts cost around $2,500. Fishermen who already spent the money could try returning the rafts, or they could try to take legal action against the government.
For being forced to purchase equipment unnecessarily.
That's Megan O'Neill, the executive director of the Petersburg Vessel Owners Association. She received news about repealing the life raft requirement Friday in an email from the Coast Guard. But she says it's ultimately up to the fishermen how they respond to the news. She says she knew of a lot of fishermen who had already purchased rafts.
I know Murray Pacific ordered a whole bunch, and our local ship store ordered a bunch.
The local ship store is Piston and Rudder Services in Petersburg. The store had ordered about a half a dozen of the rafts, but President Mike Luhr says they can return them to the vendor. He says the ordering and rule change happened so fast, it wasn't that big of a deal for them. Other fishermen ordered rafts from other vendors, and Ramp says it's up to them to return them.
And that's the tough part is, unfortunately, we were trying to give fishermen a heads up on the new rules so that they could stay compliant with the law, and then the rules changed midstream on us.
Still, Ramp believes the rafts could be required in the future anyway, and he encourages fishermen to have them on board.
It will make them operate in a safer situation if something happens to the boat, if they have the device they bought, rather than nothing. But that's a decision each fisherman's going to have to make on their own that purchased one.
Some fishermen have exemptions from the Coast Guard and can use a skiff or Zodiac in place of a life raft. Those exemptions are still good. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Rachel Waldholtz and Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Elizabeth Jenkins in Angoon, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Emily Kwong in Sitka, and Angela Denning in Petersburg. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2016 directory for older Alaskans. To order the directory or to learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
The Elder Mentor Program is about sharing the wisdom and culture of Alaskan elders in classrooms and communities across Alaska. Elders age 55 and older bring storytelling and modeling of appropriate behavior to the next generation. Earn a small stipend while supporting educational professionals and children. Alaska's Elder Mentors serve through the National Senior Corps Program. Mentor information at ruralcap.com. This message is sponsored by the Rural Alaska Community Action Program.
Support for APRN Iditarod coverage comes from Wells Fargo, proud supporter of the Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the trail. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.